Hello, welcome to another episode of Papa Bear Hikes.
Inspiring people to go outside. When does that start? Of course, at any age, and we've had people on here that have started as late as in their 50s that have decided they want to go out and enjoy the outdoors. But the best time is with children. So many stories of people we've talked to, their first memories of outdoor experiences took place in their childhood, whether it was with a family member on a camping trip or a youth group or with scouts. That's where it started. But not all youth have those opportunities. We have communities that are underserved and are not being given these opportunities. Today we have with us a representative from Big City Mountaineers, David Taus, who's going to talk a little bit about what his organization is doing to reach out to different communities to expose children to enjoying the outdoors. David, welcome to Papa Bear Hikes.
Well, thanks so much. It's great to be here.
David, how about you start off by telling us a little bit about Big City Mountaineers? I spoke about how you're trying to reach out to other, to communities that are possibly underserved or youth aren't having those opportunities to enjoy the outdoors. But if you could tell us exactly what it is Big City Mountaineers is doing to help with this.
Absolutely. So Big City Mountaineers is a national nonprofit. We operate in six metropolitan regions around the country, including Seattle, Portland, Oregon, the Bay Area, Denver, Minneapolis, and Boston. And we actually have a legacy program in Miami as well. And our mission is to provide transformative experiences through nature that help youth from disinvested communities build community and strengthen their life skills. We are 33 years old. We've been at it since 1990. And since then, we've served over 11,000 kids and provided over 45,000 nights under the stars. For many of these kids, they wouldn't have the chance to do this if we didn't provide fully outfitted, professionally guided trips for them. So, that's in a nutshell what we do.
David, you used the word transformative. I've seen this on the website, and it is transformative when we get out there, enjoy the outdoors. When we could take ourselves out of our daily lives. For adults, it might mean getting off the hamster wheel of going to work 9 to 5. For kids, it might be being away from the classroom, being away from the neighborhood, and having that opportunity not to have all that background noise.
That's definitely the goal. It's not ultimately for us to say what is and isn't transformative for another person, but I know for myself, it's changed my life getting outside, going camping, hiking, backpacking. I'm sure it has for you as well. And there's something really special about kind of leaving behind the human built environment and getting out there where there's no distractions from technology and connecting with your environment, with nature, with people in your group. It's been a very powerful thing in my life, in many people's lives. And I see it as a way to really encourage young people who might not otherwise have this access or this opportunity to do some self-exploration, to kind of build their own resiliency, their own confidence, their own self-efficacy, and their own connections to themselves and to each other.
I've seen this with youth as well as adults. When you get out there, and even that first experience in the outdoors, and doing it with a group and with an organization like yours helps to make sure it's a positive first experience. It builds that confidence, right? And I think that you start to develop a self-confidence that you take home with you.
100%. That's the goal. I mean, I think spending time on trail is intrinsically valuable. And a lot of people kind of leave it at that. But, my background before I came to Big City Mountaineers, I was in public education. I was a high school teacher. I worked in tutoring. I worked in teacher prep. And what I believe is that, there has to be some lasting effect that translates to the rest of someone's life that would help them do better in school or do better in their career trajectory. And personally, I've seen no better way to achieve those sort of social emotional support goals, self-confidence, self-efficacy, empathy, than spending a week on trail. And I'm saying this as someone who used to teach in a regular classroom. I think a week in the backcountry does more for someone's social, emotional, mental health, physical health, and personal growth than a year in a classroom. At the end of the day, like that's what they're going to carry forward, because you can't spend your whole life out on trail. but hopefully the lessons you learn there, you can take back with you and really kind of see your day-to-day a little bit differently.
And we could back this up by the thousands of people who have hiked short through trails like myself and people who have hiked some of the bigger trails like the Triple Crowners, the AT, PCT, and the CDT. Thousands talk about the life-changing experience it was, how they went back into the so-called real world or civilization, seeing things a little differently, having a little bit more confidence, going back to work with this idea that, hey, I just hiked 2,200 miles. I could do this. This yeah. task isn't overwhelming. I can do this.
Yeah, 100%. And it doesn't take 2,200 miles, although I'm sure that would be very life-changing. But you know, for the youth that come on our trips, it's a big enough accomplishment for them to do a 20-mile loop in a week and carry their own stuff. It's something they've never done. It's something, you know, they just, it's not necessarily a comfortable thing. And oh my gosh, we're not showering and there's no toilets. And how do I overcome all this? And at the end of the week, almost, you know, without exception, a lot of the feedback we're getting is, I wish we could be out longer. I learned things about myself I didn't know. They didn't start the week like that. There was a lot of nervousness and, you know, we're changing a bit of our program model to help them kind of ease into things. Traditionally, it's just been the 1 week long backcountry trip. And now what we're doing is we're calling a scaffolded approach where we do a day hike first, and then we do like a front country overnight. And that gives, kids a chance to kind of ramp up and get used to the idea that, oh man, like I'm going to stay outside and not go inside when it gets dark. And here's this tent I have to set up and here's a stove I'm going to cook on. And it just enables them to access the benefits of the experience a lot quicker if we give them a little preview before we do the big trip.
And I've seen this over my years of being a volunteer with the Boy Scouts, right? You get that kid out on his first overnight camping trip and that's a big deal,
yeah. Right?
They go home. We cooked our own food. You know, I slept in a tent. You know, I slept in a lean-to. And yeah, that's that first step. You know, your first step isn't hiking the AT, but, and I always emphasize this when I was in Scouts, I always said, those first experiences are the most important ones. Yeah. I would tell the older Scouts, we've got to really work hard, make this a good experience, because if they have a good experience, they're going to want more, right? They're going to go home saying, when are we doing this again? Or, oh, we already have to go home. Or it's already over.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's why BCM takes a lot of thought to make sure that the experience is positive. And that means a lot of things to us. You know, number one, we outfit kids head to toe. You know, we have really great donors, company donors who give us a lot of gear that would cost a lot of money if you were to buy it individually. But they go out there with sleeping bags, backpacks, rain gear, tents, cooking equipment, warm layers, you know, they're really outfitted well. And one thing we do is we give every single student a pair of boots and a pair of socks to take with them and keep. And of course, you don't want to like take shoes back once they've been used. But it's really a message that we want to send to them that says, this is just the beginning. Like you can keep walking. And we really hope they do. And it's a symbol of our intention to say, like, here's a pair of shoes. The trail is there for you. All you have to do is walk. So, you know, that's definitely a part of it. But, you know, because a lot of the youth that we work with don't necessarily see themselves demographically represented in the outdoors because of their race, because of their socioeconomic status, other aspects of their identity. A lot of our work is, I would say, helping them break down psychological and social barriers to the experience. And that's not to be taken for granted. I think, you know, people who look like me take it for granted sometimes. But these kids, you know, have reservations about going into spaces where there's not a lot of communities of color, unfortunately. And we take great care to train our instructors, train our volunteers to make sure that they feel safe, they feel welcome, they feel like they have a place out there, because they do. Public lands are for everybody. Nature is for everybody.
And I think that's important. You know, you touched on that, you know, people going out and just not feeling like they're part of it. I've interviewed representatives from a number of organizations who represent communities who are underrepresented, maybe even you could say marginalized sometimes in our society. And I think that, you know, I'm a white middle-aged guy. It's easy for me to just oversee that and just assume, you know, well, they feel comfortable. I'm not a threat to them. I'm not judging them. It's easy to assume that, but it's real. You know, if people are expressing it, it's real. And that's why I commend what your organization's doing, because if that's stopping somebody from going outside, we could fix that. That could be fixed.
Well, that's part of why we're here. One group at a time, one trip at a time, we're hoping that not just our participants, but the people who, you know, encounter us on trail, see that, hey, this is something that really is for everybody and everyone needs to be welcome in outdoor spaces. So that takes some work. We're fighting a current there, unfortunately, but we're really committed to that. It's a very important aspect of what we do.
And David, your organization is nationwide. There's a number of areas you're in, but you're primarily your headquarters, I guess you could say, is in Denver, Colorado. Is that where you started? Was in Denver?
So in 1990, the origin story is that our founder, whose name is Jim Kern, he's very involved in the American Trails movement, actually. But he founded BCM while living in Florida, and his son and him were about to go to Montana on a trip. And I believe through their church group, they found another young person who was excited about going, but didn't know what he was getting into. And they took him with. And after that week, it was just kind of a one-off. After that week, Jim said to himself, wow, there's really something powerful here. More kids need to have this experience. And from there, he formed the nonprofit. This was all in Metro Miami, which is why we have our legacy program there. Through subsequent changes and moves and other people getting involved, headquarters moved to Denver, I would say 1998, 1999, something like that. So now we're headquartered in Denver.
Yeah. What a beautiful place to have a headquarters for an outdoor organization. You got quite a backyard there to take people out to.
We do. And, you know, all of the places that we're located, we intentionally plan them to be near outdoor kind of destinations. So if you think about the Bay Area or Seattle or Portland or Minneapolis, we go up to the Boundary Waters. It's the only program we run that's not hiking. It's canoeing. We want to make sure that it's not just you have a really premier spot to go for a backpacking trip, but you also have really great public parks around you if you live in the area that, you know, you don't have to drive 3 hours to get to, and you can take a hike in a public park and, you know, have that scratch the itch a little bit. And we try to instill that into all of our participants as well.
And that's great to hear, David, because I think a lot of people of all backgrounds are hesitant to go out and engage in outdoor activities because they just feel like, well, I don't know, I don't have any experience, or I live too far from, I live too far from a national park to go out and enjoy something like that. You don't need that. Like you said, there's parks. You know, I was just out in San Francisco this summer, and I hiked the Tahoe Rim Trail and went back to San Francisco for a few days and did some walking just around the city in the parks in San Francisco. They have some beautiful parks right there that'll give you a nice hike, give you a little bit of a workout even.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I lived in San Francisco for a while, and I went to Golden Gate Park a couple times a week and got my nature fixed that way. And it's beautiful. Right there you have the Marin Headlands and Golden Gate National Rec Area that's just so accessible. Similarly, in a lot of the cities we're in, you know, in Boston, there's a bunch of parks. There's a ring of parks similar to Seattle, Portland. And they're there for people to use, and I hope people do.
I grew up across the river from New York City, and people, I mean, I remember growing up and people not believing me when I said I'd go camping or backpacking, right? Where can you do that here? You know, it's nothing but factories and oil refineries, but yeah, it's 45 minutes outside of New York City, and you're at Harriman State Park, Bear Mountain State Park, Worthington State Park, all these places where you can either just pull up at a car and camp or go on an overnight backpacking trip. The opportunities are out there.
They sure are. That's what we hope our participants realize. It's still, you know, a big leap to participate in a guided trip and then do it yourself. So we're hoping to kind of give folks the internal and the material resources to like pursue it well after their BCM experience has ended.
Doing it in a group is just, I think, such a better way to do it. First of all, it reduces those chances that that first experience is going to be miserable. And you can have, and it has happened. It's happened to me where those outdoor experiences, I'll just say, aren't quite as comfortable as others, right? You don't have the right, you can end up bringing the wrong tent, the wrong clothing. I've got stories. I was in scouting as a volunteer for over 20 years. So I could tell you stories about every piece, every article of gear that was forgotten at one time or another by a scout. Mm-hmm. But you know, and I know from, again, being in scouts, when you're with a group, you can minimize it, or it's easier to improvise when you're in a group.
Exactly. Or, you know, you forget your headlamp, but someone else has theirs and you can borrow it or something like that. So there's a safety thing there. I think also for our programming, the way we run it is not open enrollment. Instead, we look for youth agencies in each of our regions and we partner directly with them. So the youth that come to us all know each other. We insist that there is a staff person from that youth agency or school that comes on the trip to provide consistency of relationship, you know, an adult that knows them. And I think that really goes a long way to ensuring their psychological safety and making them feel like, okay, like I'm in good hands. I'm in a community I know. And it reduces a lot of the anxiety for a lot of the kids that we're working with.
We'll be back after a quick break.
You ever think about what might be in the water you're drinking every time you fill up your water bottles while you're in the outdoors? I try not to, and I really don't, because I use Sawyer water filters. Sawyer filter technology, because of their high standards, every filter is individually tested 3 times through the process. I've been using their permethrin product for years now to protect me from, well, quite frankly, ticks, and the picaridin to keep the flies at bay. Don't let bad water, insects, or a tick bite cut your trip short or even ruin it. Use Sawyer products. Go to your local outdoor retailer and ask for Sawyer products, whether it's a water filter, insect repellent, they're likely to have it. You can also go to Sawyer's website and read more about these incredible, high-quality products that they offer those of us who enjoy the outdoors.
And in my experience, I was involved with a Cub Scout pack and a Boy Scout troop, an inner city group, familiar faces, somebody you know. In our case, we'd always be trying to find parents to volunteer. It helps. It certainly does, especially if it's their first time out there. That one person that they know well enough that they could just go over and talk to if they get upset or nervous about something. And I've had a couple of situations where kids, taking them out to scout camp, getting homesick. Mm-hmm. So it's important to have that adult with them.
Absolutely. And part of our model, we haven't talked about this yet, but we integrate volunteers into the trips in addition to the instructor and the youth agency staff so that there's a really high student to adult ratio for exactly that reason. And, you know, I volunteered on one of our trips this summer. It was great. We went to Wyoming in the Medicine Bow Range, and there was 5 youth and 4 adults on that trip. So at any given point, you know, there would be the opportunity for kind of a one-on-one touch point if a kid needed extra support. And I think that's really important. I think that, you know, it's more costly, it's more labor intensive. But I think it's resources that are well worth it. When you compare our model to models where, you know, there's 15 kids and 2 instructors or something like that. It's much more high touch. And, you know, as a volunteer and hearing from other volunteers, the adults get just as much out of it as the kids do. They have, and I'm sure you found this in your scouting experience too. Really, really great time. And, you know, for me, you know, we didn't do big miles every day. We did 4 or 5 miles a day. I wasn't used to that. I'm used to doing more. But moving slowly kind of helped me see things differently and experience the landscape differently. And watching some of the kind of epiphanies, realizations, just, oh my gosh, there's ice up here and snow and it's July. Why is that? You know, stuff like that. It was really cool to be a part of that. So, I know the adults get just as much out of it as the kids do.
Yeah, I led a high adventure program within our troop for 5 years, and we usually had no less than four. 1 year we had as many as five adults with us. And yeah, they were just as much into the learning part of it, because I required any adult that was going to be on this trip to go through the training. I held a series, I think it was about five or six classes, and then about three or four warm-up trips we went on to get ready for the hike. And the adults were loving it as much as the kids. Yeah. They really were.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Hey, David, here's where I want to try to encourage people to volunteer to help youth, whether it's with your organization or just a church group or in their own communities. How rewarding is it when you go on a trip with these kids and you see the look on their faces when they get home? It's light up when they get home and start talking to their parents. You see them in the parking lot telling their parents all the cool things they did.
It's amazing. Yeah. And again, as someone who's worked in public education in schools and done a bunch of other youth work in my life, I've yet to see something as powerful as a nature-based experience, immersive nature-based experience to kind of have that light go on. And we get a lot of parents that say, wow, this is like a different kid. What did you do? How do I bottle that and do that every week? And, you know, that's magic. And, you know, as a kid, I experienced the same thing. I grew up going to YMCA summer camps, and I found this thing out there in nature through that became a through line for my life. And it led me to youth work and education, and it led me to ultimately working at Big City Mountaineers. So I'm very grateful for it myself, too.
And bringing us back to when I introduced you about we need to start with youth. You and I both have worked with youth as a result of experiences we had as youth, right? And it motivated us to continue a pursuit of enjoying the outdoors, and then as adults to be sharing it with other people.
Very much true. Yeah. And for me, it was getting outside of my own bubble. I grew up in a Midwestern suburban community where there wasn't a lot of camping. People like their creature comforts, I guess. But I, you know, got myself into this YMCA summer camp that showed me like, wow, here's something cool that you can do. And it changed my life. And I pursued it heavily myself. And, you know, to this day, I'm still a very avid backpacker. And I've picked up river rafting and canyoneering. And I just, every chance I get, that's what I want to do with my vacation time.
It's contagious. Once you start enjoying the outdoors, you want to do more of it.
Yeah.
You know, when we're getting youth out there, yeah, it's a rippling effect, just like with us. Now, they're going to have, many of them will have families and probably do the same thing. Say, all right, you know, I want my children to enjoy this the way I did.
Yeah, that's the ultimate, is that they can then turn around either now or much later in their life and then, you know, share the thing they found with someone else. And I know there's one student that I think she was in the Pacific Northwest. And she said, I want to borrow some gear from you so I can take my brother out. So didn't have to wait till, you know, she had a family of her own, but she was ready to take her brother out, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, we'd have that happen occasionally too, where a father would come to me and say, yeah, my son wants to go out on a camping trip. Can we borrow some gear from the troop? And yeah, so yeah, absolutely. With your gear, you have sponsors that are donating your gear, or do you have individuals that just donate their older gear on, you know, gear they're no longer using? Or in my case, I've donated gear to the scouts that my kids have outgrown. How do you go about accumulating gear?
Yeah, great question. So we have a pretty built up gear library. And the vast majority of our gear is donated from companies and brands. Big City Mountaineers is fairly well known in the outdoor industry. We've been around for a while. And because of that, we're really fortunate. We have a lot of brands. If I say, hey, do you have 20 extra tents? They can send us 20 extra tents. Or we need, you know, a bunch of puffy jackets. They can send us some puffy jackets. And we're getting, you know, the factory seconds or the floor models or, you know, something like that. But they're perfectly serviceable. Like, they're just as good as the one you'd buy on the retail floor. So that basically takes care of our gear needs. We're really conscious of making sure that every single trip has a set of similar gear for each student. So what we don't want is for, you know, this sort of backpack to only be with this kid and then that sort of backpack to be with that. We want it to be uniform. And for that reason, we rarely will take donations from individuals unless for some reason someone out there has 10 of the same jacket or 10 of the same backpack or something like that. So, you know, that's kind of how we're set up. But, you know, I really take my hat off to all of our corporate sponsors and all of our in-kind donors who are able to meet our gear needs, because it's really substantial.
Yeah. For an individual, just to gear up to go on a trip can be expensive. And there's seconds, but you know what? It still costs that company money. And mm-hmm. I bought seconds. We used to have a Eureka store near where I live. Mm-hmm. And you're right. That's as good as new. You know, maybe it was out on the, as it was a display or it was returned because somebody just didn't like the tent, but I've bought quite a few of them and it's as good as new.
And, oh yeah, 100%. And you know, with a group of teenagers, we're going to beat it up a little bit.
It's going
to go on a bunch of trips all summer. So I don't want to have the really delicate, fragile, ultralight thing that we're going to have to like repair every single trip. I want to have something that maybe weighs a little bit more, that we can really count on its durability. And generally speaking, that's what we're getting. And it's awesome.
And you know, that's an interesting point because I've had that conversation with people. Don't go out and spend $500 or $600 on an ultralight tent till you know how to take care of that $100, $150 tent first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. And you know, for the ultralight stuff, that's for old guys like us, maybe. But when you're a teenager, another pound or two isn't going to like make or break your experience.
Right.
Or people trying to set speed records or do 30 miles a day. You know, when our trips are going 4 or 5 miles a day, there's a lot more leeway in terms of your pack weight and that sort of thing. So, you know, we really do value durability. And you know, a lot of our companies, for example, I was this morning talking with Osprey Backpacks, who has been a really generous donor of ours. And what's great about Osprey, as you may know, is that they'll fix any backpack for any reason. So now that we have the set, we're kind of good for life.
Yeah, I don't mind giving a shout out to companies who are good to their customers, and Osprey is one of them. My son has a backpack that's over 10 years old. And I think it was a year or two ago. It was well out of warranty. Well, he broke one of the buckles and putting it in the overhead on an airplane and just smashed it. And he was like, I don't know what to do. I went here and they don't sell just the buckles. So I just reached out to Osprey. They didn't just send me the buckle for free. They sent me a whole set of buckles for this backpack. And it's one that's not even in production anymore. I'm sure they use the same, they buy their buckles from the same buckle manufacturer. But I thought, how cool is that? Mm-hmm. It's out of warranty, but they just sent me a new set of buckles.
Exactly. So, you know, there's a lot of great folks out there in the outdoor industry like that. And I'd be remiss to not mention other pack manufacturers that we're working with, Mystery Ranch, Gregory. You know, they're all really supportive of what we do and keep us well-resourced, both financially and with gear.
And with those manufacturers, you're getting quality gear as well, durable and quality. And, you know, the years I did High Adventure with the Scouts, there's cheap and then there's, you know, you pay more money and you're going to get something that's going to hold up to what a scout can put it through.
Exactly.
Well, in your case, a young person can put their gear through, right? You and I have been doing this long enough to know, don't just throw your pack on the ground, you know, don't just drag it, right?
Yeah.
A kid, that pack better be able to hold up to a lot.
Exactly. So, generally speaking, outdoor gear is good like that.
It's really exciting to hear the industry, I guess, heeding the call to do this, to answer this.
They really do. My hat goes off to all of our industry partners. And the majority of them, it's not just gear. They make financial contributions as well, because we need to get permits and buy food and rent vans and pay our staff and instructors. And all of that, you know, is important. We can't really run our programs without that. So they understand that and they support us in that way too. And it's really great.
David, is there any obstacles that BCM is having with reaching people or achieving some of their goals?
Oh, gosh. there's a lot of obstacles. I think running a nonprofit right now is a challenge. You know, the economy is in rough shape. People are less likely to make donations. We subsist exclusively on donations. We don't really have, because we don't charge for our trips at all. It's free for every kid. We don't have an earned income model. So, you know, as the markets go down and as maybe people donate to political causes during an election year, we, you know, are getting creative about how we're going to fund the experience and fund the program work. So I would say fundraising is a continual challenge, but that's true of all nonprofits, I think, especially right now. So, you know, that's front of mind for me, especially as we head into the traditional like busy season for giving, being the holidays, and how we're going to kind of convince folks that this is worth donating money to. And that's definitely top of mind.
Yeah. It's always difficult for nonprofits to raise money. It's always a challenge. But yeah, right now, like I said, the economy struggling. We have a natural disaster in our country right now. That's people are going to be wanting to, and rightfully so, donate to that cause. An election year. Those millionaires or billionaires don't need it. Give the extra money to one of these causes.
I'd like to think so too, yes.
But it's just one more obstacle. It's a real obstacle that you're facing. And now you're going. Now we're going into the Christmas season, which is another time of the year when people are a little bit strapped for cash.
It's true. Hopefully, there's a generosity, there's spirit of generosity as well. And you know, there's a lot of people in the country and in the world who do outdoor stuff and really get a lot out of it. And I hope that what we do speaks to them. So one thing that you know we've thought a lot about. In terms of fundraising is how do we get people to turn their existing outdoor adventures into a fundraiser? So other kids that can, you know, benefit from their experience. And we have a whole program for this. It's called Adventure for Someone. On our website, there's a whole page dedicated to it, but basically anyone can go choose any adventure. It could be a small one, you know, it could be a through hike. It could be anywhere in between. And we help kind of overlay a fundraising component onto it. So, you know, if you said to yourself, hey, I'm going to hike the Tahoe Rim Trail, which I just heard you did, we could kind of layer an extra amount of meaning or purpose onto that by saying for every mile you hike on the trail, you know, maybe ask your buddies and your family to donate a quarter a mile or something like that. And we take care of all of the logistics around that. You do your adventure, and everyone wins. You know, I think you have extra meaning for the thing that you're doing, knowing that every step you take or every paddle you paddle or every mile you bike or whatever you choose to do will benefit a young person out there who might not otherwise have the chance to go out. Yeah, we call it Adventure for Someone, and we hope that outdoor enthusiasts can sign on and get involved and turn their next adventure into an adventure for someone.
Well, David, you gave me something to think about going into 2023 when I start thinking about what I want to do for my 2 to 3 week adventure. I haven't decided yet. It could be the Wonderland Trail. I'm looking at Yosemite, but certainly something for me to think about.
I hope you do. I hope, you know, everyone out there does. And if you have listeners who are thinking about a through hike or a section hike or really anything, you could build it around, hey, I just need to get outside and walk to work for a week. Like, you could do it around that. But I think for the bigger things that maybe someone needs a little extra push to really take on, this is often the extra push for them. So, you know, last summer we had someone do the Colorado Trail. And this summer we had someone do the JMT. There's a guy right now, he's just turned 40 and he's doing 40 different kind of ultra activities in his 40th year of life. And that's the fundraiser all year round. There's a guy who's walking, it's not really backcountry, but he's walking from Boston to Los Angeles. And, you know, he's turned that into a fundraiser for us. So, every entry point is welcome. But, you know, if you're considering doing something more substantial, a bigger trail, a bigger adventure, and you just need a little extra push, or you want to give it a little extra meaning and purpose, I think this is a great way to do it.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, because my next question is going to be, how can we help? But this sounds like a fun way to help, right?
Totally.
For people listening to this, we love the outdoors. So when I'm listening to you, I'm saying, well, if I go out and do the Wonderland Trail, I'm going to hike 92 miles. This could be a lot of fun and raise some money for a good cause.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would love to hike the Wonderland Trail. It's been on my list for a while. But yeah, whatever your adventure is, you could turn it into an adventure for someone. And all you really have to do is go to our website, bigcitymountaineers.org. And there's a navigation on the top, and you'll find Adventure for Someone there, or Fundraise Adventure for Someone. And that is your starting point. That'll get you going. You know, it's really up to you individually to plan your trip. We're not going to dictate what it is you're going to do. But when you're ready and decided, like, okay, I'm going to do this, the Wonderland Trail, then we will help you set up a fundraising page, give you some marketing resources, give you some kind of email templates or social media templates that you can use, and, you know, get everyone else engaged. And it's fun for them too, because they can see your progress and know that they're kind of with you in spirit as you're out there. And it feels great to have that.
Yeah, I bet. David, is there anything else we can be doing as outdoor enthusiasts, as people who appreciate and love the outdoors? Is there anything we can be doing to help your organization or to help it grow, bring it into other communities?
Well, it's a great question. You know, I would say just blanket statement, as people are out recreating on the trail, be welcoming and make sure that, you know, if you see a group or people that maybe look different from you, come from different backgrounds, they quote, may not seem like they belong, like, be welcoming to them and make sure that everyone does feel welcome. I think that's number one. For Big City Mountaineers specifically, you know, doing an adventure for someone is an amazing way to support. And I would love it if in the new year, or if people want to do a winter thing, even we get some people interested in doing an AFS. But other than that, you know, we, as every nonprofit does, accept donations. It's tax deductible. You can go to bigcitymountaineers.org and make a donation there. And if you live in one of our regions of service, there are opportunities to volunteer. And I will say that, you know, there's a long list of volunteers and a short list of spots for our trails, our trail programs. So we can't guarantee that everyone is going to get on trail with a group. But, you know, we do take adults out on these trips. It's a wonderful experience. It's a great week out. It's fully outfitted. We buy all the food, do all the permitting. We can even give you gear if you need it. And if you can't take a week, you know, there's options for day hikes, single night overnights, and we need a lot of volunteers to help pack the trips out and pack them back in. That just is a really time intensive thing for a group. So, you know, if you wanted to volunteer a half day at one of our regional headquarters and help us, you know, make piles of gear and pack out the packs and organize the food, we definitely will take you up on that.
Yeah, it's not as simple as just saying, okay, guys, you know, all right, you eight kids or how many you have and four adults are just going to go for a hike. It takes a lot of volunteers. It is. It's more than just the people that are out on that trail.
Yes, it takes a village and there's a lot of prep work. Our regional managers work tirelessly year round to make sure that our 5 months of season happen. So there's a lot behind the scenes that's going on. My metaphor is it's like the swan where you see hopefully the swan gliding calmly across the top of the water. But underneath, what you're not seeing is just they're paddling like crazy. You know, that's definitely a truth as to like the amount of work it takes to get a BCM trip up and out. So financial contributions are probably the most important thing that we need. We can turn money into anything else that we might need. And volunteering is definitely a need as well. So we'd encourage folks out there to get involved in any of those ways.
So, David, once again, how do people find Big City Mountaineers?
Yes, our website is bigcitymountaineers.org. We are also on Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter and Instagram. And I believe in the coming months, we're going to be on TikTok. This is not my generation's platform, but apparently it will be a thing soon. So find us on any of those. You can just search Big City Mountaineers and follow or link or friend or like us. But I would say, you know, the website is the most important thing. So that's bigcitymountaineers.org.
We'll make sure we put a link to that description for the podcast. So any of you who are at the gym or driving, don't pull over. Don't get off the treadmill. When you get home, go on your computer, go to Papa Bear Hikes and look up the episode, and you'll see a link to the website and to the social media. David, in closing, if you can just give us some words that would encourage people to help, why should they help?
Because nature is for everyone. And outdoor experiences, especially immersive outdoor experiences, have the potential to change a life. It's changed my life. It may have changed yours. And there's young people out there who may not have access to that. And, you know, giving them that sort of access is quite a gift that, you know, they can use to empower themselves and help themselves lead a life of their own choosing. So really, that's what Big City Mountaineers is here to do. And we would love to have your support and have you join us in this work.
That's great, David. Well said. David Taus, Big City Mountaineers, thank you once again for coming on Papa Bear Hikes and sharing all this with us.
Oh, my pleasure. It was great to be here and talk a little bit about what we do. Thank you so much.
Great. Everybody, get outside, have some fun, be safe.
Thanks for listening. If you haven't done so yet, go to our website, papabearhikes.com. Listen to past episodes. Check us out on social media. Go to our YouTube channel, Martin Outside. All those links are there. In addition to that, you can buy our book or see what you're missing out on if you're not a Patreon member yet. Remember to get outside, have fun, and be safe.
This episode of Papa Bear Hikes has been brought to you by Avalon Publicity. Avalon Publicity, increasing the digital footprint of content creators and skilled professionals via website development and social media services. For more information about Avalon Publicity, go to their website, avalonbusiness.org. That's avalonbusiness.org.